It is my aim to create beautiful paintings which transcend the superficial look of things to reveal meaning through enigma, allegory, and issues about which I care. Coming up next. Good afternoon. You have tuned into Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program focusing on the understanding and the enhancement of the visual arts. Ears on Art is produced in the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving the California Central Coast from Salinas to Ventura. Today's guest is former San Luis Obispo resident Mark Beck and his wife Carmela. I enticed Mark to do the interview by inviting him to dinner with mutual friends. Mark is one of the accomplished artists who not only produces works of tremendous beauty and technique, but also works that are thought-provoking and at times disturbing. After a few glasses of wine, we now join Mark, Carmela, and myself. Good afternoon. I am here with Carmela, Zoe, and Mark Beck. And I actually lured them to my house on false pretenses and the fact that I invited them out here for dinner so that I could get this interview with them. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Stephen. Thank you. Thank you for deceiving me.
So, Mark, the first thing that we have to discuss is, it's a question we ask all of the artists. When did you find the artistic bent? When did you think that you were going to be an artist?
Well, I was about 10, and there was a kid in my class that drew cartoons, and I just became suddenly fascinated with it. And I started just emulating him, copying him, and then I moved on, and by the time I was about 15, I was deeply interested in the Hudson River School painters. Mm-hmm. And I was oil painting by then. But for years I had been ink drawing, and I was really, really into it.
How did the Hudson River School influence you?
Basically, I just loved the depiction of these beautiful landscapes and the history behind it, that it was an offshoot of Manifest Destiny, the idea that this was our country and it was ours to conquer and explore. And that's kind of what they did. And some of them went even further than that. They went to South America, and this was a time before there was TV or even very good photographs. So it communicated to the outside world. And I found the whole thing very interesting. But mainly the paintings were just so beautiful. I was just so drawn to the beauty of the landscape paintings.
You used to live here in San Luis Obispo. What brought you here?
To San Luis Obispo? Well, I moved here in 1978 to go to Cal Poly and to study agriculture.
What?
Of all things. Yeah, well, being an artist back then wasn't really considered legitimate in most circles. I had a great high school teacher, and he had gone to the Oakland School of Art, but my parents asked him if there was any way he could talk me into becoming a lawyer or a doctor. So that's where that was. So I couldn't really imagine going down that road. So I started at Cal Poly. I thought I would be a farmer and paint on the weekends, which, of course, is the last profession you paint on the weekends. So after a few up and down years at Cal Poly, I was asked to pursue my educational goals elsewhere. And so I went to art school in Portland, Maine.
Why Portland, Maine?
The draw to Portland was that their mentor at the time was Cezanne, and I didn't really know that much about Cezanne. I learned quickly, but it was a very serious school, and they were very serious about drawing and color and design, and I lacked that. I was 28 by the time I went to art school, and I lacked basic formal skills, so I knew I needed to go, even though I had been painting a long time.
My initial training was in drawing, and I found that those people who did not have a basic in that were not very good painters. It's like, you know, you have to learn the basics of form and shape and shadow before you move on to color. Definitely. Did you find that to be true?
I definitely did. I didn't really even understand that a drawing wasn't just a floating image on a page, that it had to have a format, which is just a line that defines the space. That was a real eye-opener. And that also that colors interact and you invent them as you need them to affect you in whatever way you want. I didn't know anything about that. I just painted local color. Mm-hmm. You know, the sky is blue, the grass is green. So that was a big education. But yeah, and then I realized that drawing was definitely the foundation of it. And I think I had a pretty good inkling at the time. But it would be like trying to build a boat without knowing how to use wood tools. Drawing is definitely the basis for it.
You moved to the Central Coast, but your family was originally from New Mexico. And when you got here, you had some fairly interesting teaching experiences. Would you like to tell us about that?
At the men's colony?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I taught at the men's colony for 4 years, from 87, I think, to 91. And I taught evening classes of drawing for inmates, two inmates. And then they worked me into the Arts and Corrections program out of UCLA worked me into a position where I was a crew boss, and I hired inmates to paint murals for the community of San Luis Obispo. And so we made murals for Cal Poly offices. We put one in the DMV, offices like that. And it was a very intriguing job. And I was there for 4 years. And then I realized it was time to move on. And it was at that point that I was able to make my first really serious body of work. And the prison enabled me to do that because it paid really well. For the few hours I worked there, it paid well enough for me to pay rent and buy materials and get serious about painting, because I knew that I was going to go on to become a professional painter, and I really had no idea what that really meant, but that's what I was going to do. So,
you have sold internationally, and specifically, I think you were some of your paintings were sold to corporate collections in Japan. Could you explain a little bit about that? Because that's something that I have absolutely no knowledge or experience.
Well, I had a show in Japan in a department store, and department stores there are very serious affairs. There was a couple that saw my work in LA or Pasadena or somewhere in Southern California, and they wanted to give me a show. They were art dealers themselves, and they lived part-time in California and part-time in Japan. So they gave me a show there, and it was very successful. And it really bumped up my career to have had an international show. As far as corporate collections, I'm not privy to all my collectors, because usually it's not shared by art dealers. But I know that John Nordstrom has one, the owner of Nordstrom's. There's a son of the CEO of Exxon. And these were commissions, actually. Mm-hmm. these pieces in the corporate type collections, and I'm really not sure about too many of the other collections. But that's definitely something that I've sought, and try to encourage my dealers to place my work where it could be noticed by a lot of people publicly.
So you've mentioned commissions. How does that work?
Well, sometimes people see my work on my website, or they see it in someone's home, and they contact me, and I talk to them and see if they know enough about artists and art to let me make the artistic decisions and work the way that I need to work. I've taken probably between 40 and 50 commissions over the years, and I've always had happy customers.
I have never liked commissions. I don't like others interfering in my artistic process. So what I've usually agreed to do is that I will do a painting as I want the painting to be done, and if they don't wish to purchase it, that's fine. There are no obligations. Do you work up some form of contractual relationship before you agree to do a commission?
Well, sometimes we do a formal arrangement and they pay half down, but I don't make a painting that I wouldn't want to place in a gallery. So I don't, you know, if they want a picture of something that I wouldn't normally paint, I won't do it. I just won't take the commission. It really has to be a person that understands that they need to trust me to do what I want to do. And they're basically asking me to revisit a painting. And if I can see a way that means something to me to make another painting, then I'll do it. And sometimes they just give me too much of what they want, and I know that I'll never be able to please them, so I just don't do it. But, you know, usually before, I never have to say, sorry, I won't do it. They start getting nervous because they think that they don't have enough control, and so they just gracefully back out. I enjoy it because just on a business standpoint, I know I'm going to get paid in the end. And I also get to revisit something that I came up with originally on my own. And it's usually interesting. And sometimes it even leads me to stick with that theme for a while.
We're talking about theme here because I tend to paint in series. And I know you have as well in the past. But is that something that is a mindset for you? Do you find something that's really obsessive and you maintain that for a while, or is it just a one-off and you tend to go different directions?
Well, lately, I think I do tend to go in different directions, but I think my style is finally fairly cohesive no matter what I'm painting. When I was younger, when I created my first body of work, I made simple buildings, and I just stuck to the theme because I knew I was going to market these things after the prison job was over. I stuck to this theme, and I set a goal of 16 paintings. And so I made those paintings. It was very cohesive. And now my paintings are as cohesive, but it's not the same subject matter. Different sized canvases, different topics altogether. But I think my color is consistent, and the feeling and the handling of paint is consistent.
If you have just tuned in, you are listening to Ears on Art, a program produced in the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Today's guest is painter Mark Beck, a former resident of the San Luis Obispo area who now resides in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
We are sitting in my den, and I actually happen to have a Mark Beck painting hanging behind me, and it was part of his shack series that he did. His new paintings are very bright, impressionistic. I'm astounded at the layers of paint on them. I mean, there's a history on each of the canvases. Is that something that you're investigating?
Yeah, I paint differently. Now, I used to paint very thinly and very deliberately. I usually did a pretty careful drawing and had a pretty careful idea. Now it's different in that I'm not afraid to change the painting completely. And sometimes if you introduce an element like a line or something and there's some texture to the paint, Usually I would get rid of that somehow. I would sand it, I would scrape it, whatever. Now I just paint over it and I add more paint and I obscure it that way. And I think I just kind of layer it as I get more ideas and I spend more time on these paintings than I used to on single pieces. And sometimes I even glaze a little bit and then paint back over that and then glaze again. They're pretty thick now. The paintings are pretty thick. I do like paint. I like the physicality of paint. But I want it to read well from 6 or 8 feet away. And
the new work is much more impressionistic. Is that a product of age or experience?
Yeah, I think it's a product of experience a lot. Because I don't think that facility is really that important. Mm-hmm. I think if you like the way paint looks and you want it to look good up close, even if it is thick and globby in places, can still make it look good. I don't want it to look awkward, but it doesn't have to be really polished in order to work as a painting. It doesn't have to be super smooth. You don't have to brush every stroke out so it's completely flat. It comes with experience because you become more confident and you're not afraid to just go in there and make major changes if you need to.
I think every artist paints for communication. We tend to side on preciseness or realisticness. How much does that tie into what you're painting?
Well, that's a good question because I've struggled with the problem of realism for a long time. I think I still do because I tend to want to make things look right in a certain light. And then I find myself, I've just lost touch with my painting. Mm-hmm. So I try to figure out, how can I depict this thing so that it has the effect I want without killing it because it looks so real? And I don't want people to say, wow, it looks so real. To me, I failed.
We were joined by Mark's wife, Carmela, who is the business half of this married couple. Carmela and I have a bit of a history.
And we've been blessed because Mark's wife, Carmela, has entered the room. And Carmela was my very first employee back in 88 when I had William Stevens Dessert Company. And actually, she was kind of a backdoor introduction to Mark's work.
Yes, I first met Mark it was through a painting. My girlfriend and I were downtown San Luis Obispo at the Earthling Bookstore when that was there, and I saw his self-portrait on the wall. And I said, who's that guy? My girlfriend knew who he was, and she goes, oh, well, that's Mark Beck. He's an artist around town, and got to meet him. I looked for him and found him and finally started dating him, and that's about the time that I started working for you.
But that was when Mark was struggling.
Well, that dark horse that he painted, we were pals. I don't even think we were actually dating, but we were having coffee all the time together. I paid $500 for that painting, which was a lot of money back then. But it's because I liked him so much, and I loved that painting. And he was poor. I mean, he was living in a barn and painting in a barn, but he was so committed and so talented. I think everybody wanted to support him because he was the guy that was always doing that, and that's all he did, and that's all he wanted to do, and he was really serious about it. And then when you come across in a small town someone who's that committed, everybody kind of notices that person.
What have we not covered that you want to be covered?
Well, I would say, on the topic of Carmela, that I wouldn't be the artist I am now without Carmela's support, both artistically, which I rely on, and business-wise. She does all my emailing. She is the office, and she suggests career ideas and dealers to contact, who to send pictures to, and many things. And it's invaluable because I would just paint. Then, you know, everything else would fall by the wayside. I mean, there's very few artists that can do both. And if they can, they're really lucky, but I just recoil at the thought of sitting down at the computer to email people. I just figured out how to actually send an email a couple of years ago.
So, Stephen, when I think about someone like you, who's an accomplished artist, and my husband, Mark, the two of you are so gifted, but if you don't have someone who's out there in today's social media, I mean, there's people who post on Facebook 10 times a day, but that's kind of what it takes now to get your name out there and to get seen and to have people know that you're having a show. I mean, that's
right.
That's the way it is now. Like in the 80s, because I went to Cal Poly for right. journalism and PR, you know, I would type a press release on a typewriter, on an actual typewriter. And that's, you know, then you sent that to the newspaper and the newspaper would put a little posting. Yeah. But now it's all about social media and tweeting and yeah. I haven't gone that far. But having an awesome website, having a great...
Bad me.
Facebook page. Yeah. Do you have a Facebook page?
No.
Even that would be awesome for you. Yeah. Because you know what? People have contacted Mark from across the country from mm-hmm. his Facebook page. Just Googled his name on Facebook and found him and then, you know, bought paintings from him that way. But I think you really need, as an artist, to focus on the artistic part because that's what you do best.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a huge time sucker and a time waster to get on the computer and do all that stuff. It takes like 20 hours a week of emailing and stuff. And that's, you know, I kind of like doing it, I have mm-hmm. to admit. But I also like connecting with people who love Mark and his work, and mm-hmm. I help him with his business. But he's learning to do a lot of it. He does know how to email now, and he does know how to get on his Facebook page and do postings and stuff. But I think it's really helpful to have someone who does all that stuff, because it's not the artistic part. It's not the stuff that gives you ideas for your next body of work or has you, you know, going to a graveyard in the middle mm-hmm. of the day doing a charcoal and then deciding that you're going to do gouache and then changing it to pastel. And I mean, that's a whole different mindset.
I understand the importance of social media.
Yeah. But also because it's important that you know that people out there want to connect with you. That's yeah. the interesting thing, is that everybody in the world loves artists and they love music and they mm-hmm. love good food. But how do they get that good food or mm-hmm. buy that painting if they don't know who you are? So you need someone who's going to advertise who you mm-hmm. are.
And I'm so not good at that.
Yeah.
And are you?
It takes a village.
No, I'm not very good at it. But I realize in this world with so many artists and so few dealers, really.
Mm. Are there any?
Yeah. I haven't met any yet. I have had some good help from art dealers. And I have long-standing relationships, which I appreciate. But you really need to... Like Carmela says, you need to get your name out there as much as you possibly can, because it's incredibly competitive. And people that are really good with social media mm-hmm. and promoting themselves all over town, everywhere they go, they get big opportunities. I just don't do it the way I should. You know, I'll put business cards in my pocket when I go out to an opening or something,
and then
I'll forget to even... pass them out. Then I get home and empty them out of my coat pocket. Yeah. And I go, oh, damn.
Well, I think actually the whole marketing end of artwork is shifted. I mean, tremendously shifted in ways that at least a person of my age had never anticipated. It's like, you know, we used to go to galleries. We used to go to agents. That now is completely unimportant.
Yeah, you don't even need dealers anymore.
You don't need dealers.
There's a lot of online. There's even online selling.
Yeah.
A new thing that's happening in Southern California anyway is they'll have a show and then they'll produce a catalog for the show.
Yeah.
And they'll send it to the clients because it's a better representation than online.
Right.
And people will buy it right off the catalog. They may be familiar with the artist's work enough to know the surface and mm-hmm. the general quality. They'll see the show online, and then they'll buy it off the catalog.
Right.
You know, it happens online. Actually, an online catalog. Yeah. So you actually turn the page. So it's very handy. And business gets done quickly that way, too. There's all this... media stuff just makes things happen really fast.
It's not beyond my capabilities. It just takes a lot of investment, yeah. time and energy. And...
Well, think about how nice it was to all be at the opening on Friday night when we were there. Because we're all there together. And then when you go to a traditional opening, you get right. to meet the artist. You get right. to stand there with him near right. his painting and say, why did you paint that? Or what does that mean? And what did that mean to you? You can't do that in an online
Or venue. Simply to be in the same room with the artist, to me, is important. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand this kind of off-person... association.
That kind of thing makes artists feel more isolated than they could already be, because painting is solitary business. Yeah, so intensely personal, and it means a lot to get a little bit of feedback mm-hmm. from real people. And if your work sells, that's great. But if you just meet that person for a minute, or they maybe even email you mm-hmm. and say, hey, I have your painting, I love it, that can keep you going. You know, that could keep you going for 6 months. Like you said earlier, it is about communication, and it's about making connections with the world mm-hmm. out there. And that's a huge part of it. And if you sell a painting, then you have completed your goal, mm-hmm. and that is to connect with somebody that feels the same way you do.
Thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Stephen.
And thank you, Carmela.
Today's guests have been painter Mark Beck and his wife and business manager, Carmela Beck. Mark currently has a show at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art titled The Tyranny of Beauty. The show runs through August 18th, and the museum is located at 1010 Broad Street at the southern end of Mission Plaza in downtown San Luis Obispo. The hours of operation are 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. through Labor Day, and admission is free. The San Luis Obispo Museum of Art may be reached by calling 805-543-8562, and you can access more information at sloma.org. Mark has his own website at markbeckpaintings.com, where you can review his gallery of paintings and find out contact information. At the Steinberg Gallery at 1531 Monterey Street near California Boulevard in San Luis Obispo is a show of posters and installations titled Up in Arms, A Creative Response to Gun Violence. The show consists of 100 works of art by 45 different artists and runs through July 28th. The event is sponsored by the Peace Library, a community-based collaborative art project created by Julie Frankel and Melinda Forbes. Forbes stated, "The purpose of Up in Arms is to give people a voice and a venue to discuss gun violence." For information on the gallery, visit their website at steynberggallery.com. Gallery hours are 7 a.m. until 6 p.m. On a sad note, the radio community lost one of its own last month. Gary Squibbs, longtime actor in the San Luis Obispo broadcast scene, died of injuries sustained in an accident in June. Gary was a multi-talented individual, and his humor and his insightful intellect are sorely missed. Our hearts go out to his friends and his family. You have been listening to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program airing the first and second Wednesday of each month at 1:30 p.m. Ears on Art is produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, located at 4100 Vachel Lane, near the intersection of Los Osos Valley Road and South Higuera Street in San Luis Obispo, California. You can visit their website at kcbx.org, where you can review past programs of Ears on Art by clicking on the Archives button and selecting the program you wish to hear. The phone number for KCBX is 805-549-8855. KCBX serves Southern Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties on the California Central Coast. We would again like to thank today's guests, painter Mark Beck and his wife and business manager, Carmela Beck. This is Stephen DeLuque, and for co-host and co-producer Chrissa Hewitt, we thank you so very much for listening.